Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. There's been a certain lack of aggressiveness by the gubernatorial candidates in their public appearances. As we'll hear from our Maine politics team, Steve Missler and Mal Leary, this may be no accident. Mal has seen more of these races than, let's just say he's seen a whole bunch of them.
Usually there's like one or two issues that kind of fire up the candidates on either side, or an independent and a party candidate, and they go at each other and they hammer home at the debates on those issues. We haven't seen anything like that. They seem to be rather polite, and quite frankly, it's like talking point after talking point over talking point.
So Steve Missler, the next question is, why?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I've seen some folks sort of speculating that there's like some unspoken agreement that they're all going to be civil to one another. But I don't know that there really is such an agreement. I just think that there's so much outside spending in this race, close to $7 million so far. And I think the candidates, especially the two who we believe are the front runners, which is Janet Mills and Sean Moody, are just going to let those ads and the outside spending do the dirty work for them. And I think there's a reason for that. You know, in the past, those ads have bled on stage and the candidates are going after one another. I mean, you could see that in the second congressional district race where it's really been the focus. But I think there's a personality dynamic at work here between Mills and Moody that might be why they're so restrained. I mean, Moody, you know, he's reciting a lot of talking points that relate to his business. He's trying to maintain that affability that he became so known for when he first ran in 2010. And Mills, who we all know is very sharp and sharp-tongued, but we have not seen that from her, with a few exceptions, one of which was during this discussion about transparency, which morphed into this kerfuffle over tax returns.
I'm waiting for Mr. Moody to provide his tax returns so we can all see that as a first act of transparency.
So what's this likely to mean for the race itself as we go down the road here?
First of all, Erwin, the voting has already started, and that's something that people forget. The numbers I saw from the Secretary of State were something like 14,000 people have already voted in these races as of the computation that was conducted on Monday. In 2016, we had over 250,000 votes cast absentee. If we have that kind of numbers going on, a lot of folks are going to decide how they're voting in the governor's race long before the polls open in November. So we've got a different dynamic here. These candidates are aiming at people who are voting now. They're aiming at trying to convince undecided voters to vote for them in the end. And I think that's part of what we're seeing in this race, is they're trying to be very careful not to alienate some particular voter block while trying to appeal to a particular block that their internal polling shows they might be able to get.
I think you hit an important point, Mal, which is I think one of the reasons why they're not really going after each other in the race, another reason, is that if Janet Mills were to just dismantle something that Sean Moody had said and did it in a way where it looked like she seemed less likable than him or something like that, that might not be good for her in terms of winning those persuadable voters that Mal is talking about. And I think the same goes for Sean Moody. If he went on the full attack against Janet Mills, that may not look great for him either, because one of his big positives is, again, his affability.
All right, this race isn't happening in a vacuum. Is the lack of, for lack of a better word, controversy in the governor's race going to mean more public attention on any of the other contests? And what effect could it have on them?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the most hotly contested race isn't the governor's race. It's the second congressional district. There is an interplay between the races that always occurs. But the reality is a lot of Maine voters are notorious for being a ticket splitter. People tend to look at the candidates and vote the way they feel about that particular candidate. That's why you can have Hillary Clinton taking most of the state and Donald Trump taking the second congressional district. People tend to look at the candidates and vote the way they feel about that particular candidate. And it's not just issues. I mean, one of the things that's very difficult to quantify here is how people feel about a candidate. One of the things that I've always remembered through my career is an interview I had with Senator Ed Muskie after he had retired and had been Secretary of State. And he said, the most important thing you can get from the voters is their trust. They won't agree with you on every issue, but if they trust that you're trying to do what's right, they'll vote for you. So how do you measure that sort of intangible, which I think is crucial to how a lot of people vote?
Yeah, what's interesting, too, it might be stealing this from Mao, because I think he said it to me this morning, if I remember correctly, which is that you could argue that that governor's debate was underwritten by all the ads in the second congressional district. There was so many of them. It was crazy.
All right. There are four candidates in that race, by the way, we should point out. Bruce Poliquin, the incumbent Republican, Jared Golden, the Democrat, and also the independents Will Hoare and Tiffany Bond. Now, the four of them debated on Tuesday evening on WAGM-TV in Presque Isle, likely the last time all four of them are going to share a stage. So what were the major takeaways from that, Mal?
I think it's clear that Bruce Poliquin is sticking to his talking points, and those are that Jared Golden is too liberal, that he would do things that Mainers don't want to have happen, and that he's a good guy and has been working hard for them in the 2nd District. That comes through time and time again, even when the question has nothing to do with those particular topics. That's how he answers. So Bruce Poliquin has been right on target. Jared Golden has done a good job of trying to knock down some of those assertions. What I had fun with in covering this last debate was, once again, Poliquin seemed to keep trying to tie Jared Golden to Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, the former Speaker of the House when the Democrats controlled, as if that was something that's going to, you know, sink Golden's campaign. Well, he pointed out very quickly that when he announced that he was running for Congress, he also announced he wasn't supporting Nancy Pelosi. So he has a long history of there saying, I'm not supporting her. What muddies the water, as it is in all of these campaigns, is the outside spending, because you have huge amounts of money being spent by Nancy Pelosi's PAC to support Golden, either directly or by attacking Poliquin. And the flip side of that is House Speaker Paul Ryan's super PAC is spending a lot of money to support Poliquin and attack Golden. So you have these independent expenditures by those very groups that are a point of contention between those two candidates.
Right. And just to build off that, what Bruce Poliquin is trying to do is run a typical incumbent campaign where he's trying to talk about the status quo and sort of warn voters about the dangers of this insurgent radical, as he's described Golden from so often. And that's really what he's trying to do, is like, you know, things aren't so bad. The economy's pretty good here. Just remember, you know, that I've been here for 4 years and things are fine. And I think that's really the message he's trying to send.
And lurking in the background of all this, too, is President Trump.
Well, of course, Trump has an impact on this election, as does outgoing Governor Paul LePage. I mean, the Democrats, I think, have a lot of their enthusiasm that has been built up because it's negative energy against the policies of Paul LePage here in the state and the policies of President Trump at the national level.
As it relates to Trump, which is really interesting, is that he doesn't get mentioned by either of the two leaders in this race, that's Poliquin or Golden. Even though this race is so consequential to the president's agenda going into his reelection campaign, neither of these candidates are really talking about him. And in fact, we don't know if Bruce Poliquin even voted for him 2 years ago. Golden, when asked about things like, will you vote to impeach the president? He's not saying that that's something he's interested in doing right now, which is probably a smart thing to do in a second congressional district, considering that they supported Trump and they still have a relatively high opinion of him.
And Mal, I guess we're going to get a look soon at some new poll numbers in this race.
Yeah, the New York Times is doing a wonderful project where they're doing polling basically live, where you can see as the numbers come in from across a particular poll. They're doing it in a number of congressional districts. They're doing it in Maine's 2nd District. The first one was September 12th when they polled just over 500 people in the district, and it showed Bruce Poliquin up by 5. So far, Jared Golden's doing very well. So we're seeing some shift there that may play out, that there is momentum, as they say, for Jared Golden. I caution with that because the margin of error on the whole poll is 5 points. I think what it really is telling us is this is a very close election, and we're not going to see someone win by a big margin.
Yeah, what's also interesting about that poll is that we have a baseline in terms of for favorability of the candidates. Now, with Pollack, when he was slightly underwater in the first poll by New York Times and Siena College, he hasn't really changed in his position. But in that first poll, Golden, you know, he was about even in terms of favorability and unfavorability. But the big number that jumped out was that nobody knew who he was. Now, that number is shrinking, which I think is an effect of the ad spending in that race, $7 million in outside money so far, where those outside groups are trying to define Golden for voters. On the, you know, if they're conservative groups, they're trying to just portray him as a risky young radical. And if for Golden, it's somebody who is going to protect people's health care and protect Social Security and Medicare.
I think what's really important here, Irwin, is that as people are knowing more from all of these ads, it appears that Golden's going up.
Right. Yeah.
And that is not going that just can't be good news for Bruce Poliquin's campaign folks, because usually they're in the position of maintaining a reasonable lead right through to the end of the polling. And this time it appears that's not going to happen.
Let's return to that gubernatorial debate on the television stations of News Center Maine and the heat that was generated by Pat Callahan's question about government transparency. The LePage administration has been rather opaque. Steve Mistler, what effect do you think that's had on the public's understanding of their government and elected officials?
The whole point of public records laws and knowing, for example, where the governor is on any given day, what he's doing, and, you know, just interacting with the press is important to know what your government is doing, and not just him, but the entire state bureaucracy. So what we've seen over the last few years, despite the governor's promises to be the most transparent governor in state history, he's been exactly the opposite of that.
And what's really most unfortunate is LePage really echoes a number of governors across the country. I got to disclose the fact that I've been a longtime advocate for open government, both here in Maine, and I'm also president of the National Freedom of Information Coalition. We're not the only state where it takes reporters months and months and months to get documents that should be just produced within a matter of days. This whole function of government becoming more secret and less transparent is a phenomenon that's going on across the country that folks are battling in every single state. Even in Florida, which has probably the strongest laws on open government, it's actually in the state constitution. Governor Rick Scott down there has been very successful in delaying and delaying and delaying the release of documents on such things as where he's been and how often he's used the state helicopter to go places, all those sorts of issues that people would like to know how their money's being spent and how policies are being developed, and they just can't get that information. And here at Maine, that's been part of the problem with Governor LePage. If he wants you to get documents, they literally are emailed to you within a matter of hours. But if for some reason the administration does not want to make those documents available, you can wait months, if not more than a year.
Political reporters Mal Leary and Steve Mistler. You'll note the New York Times Siena College poll we discussed now shows the 2nd District congressional race is a dead heat between Republican incumbent Bruce Poliquin and his Democratic challenger Jared Golden. Well, that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We'll be back weekly between now and Election Day. Have questions about politics for Mal, Steve, or me? Well, send them our way. You can find us on Twitter and the Maine Public website. You can find abbreviated versions of Maine's Political Pulse on Friday's Morning Edition program on Maine Public Radio, and keep an eye out for short updates that may be posted throughout the week. Our producer is Willis Ryder Arnold. Music is from Rob Holt. For Maine Public, I'm Erwin Gratz.